Neil, you were talking about the Athens Olympics, and let's pick that up from there.
Yeah, we were talking about generational drift, how products age when they age with their main customers when they become very popular. You think of the Cadillac, how that aged with the GI generation as they grow older. Do you remember the T-Bird, the Thunderbird?
Oh, sure.
Popular in the 50s, and it just got bigger and fatter, and by the 80s, it became this huge car.
And then it went down again. And
yeah, and then they suddenly had to resize it. You see, you suddenly have to ratchet it back down, and
start over again.
Toyotas and Hondas aged with boomers. Well, it was interesting. You see Nike aging with a little bit with Gen X. And so, yeah, the Athens Olympics. So they looked around, and, of course, at Athens Olympics for the first time, you began to see all these millennial athletes, right, winning gold medals. And they weren't wearing black. They were dressed in bright colors. And a lot of them brought their moms and dads with them. And when they won medals, they would give each other their medals. And they would, for instance, turn down competing in an event to allow their friend to compete. This actually got a lot of news at the time. And suddenly they had these guys at Nike were saying, wait a second, what is this? You know, this isn't our brand. I mean, you know, this isn't the tooth and nail, just do it, you know, put your face into the dirt to win kind of thing. And so, see, this is what happens. You ride a generation, and then suddenly generational replacement forces you to suddenly rethink exactly where you are. And so it works its way out in our commercial life in very interesting ways.
Does it also, though, change a society? Not buying habits, but attitudinal in the way we live.
Well, totally. I mean, it changes the entire social mood. And in fact, these seasons we've been talking about, you know, the spring, summer, fall, winter of history is simply each generation, each type, entering a new phase of life, so that each of those seasons, a different type of generation enters the leadership, you know, the midlife phase of life. A new generation becomes young adults. A new generation emerges as children. And I think that that is definitely influencing the mood of America as we move into the fourth turning. The fourth turning is defined, as we've seen this many times in history, as defined as an era in which the prophet archetype is moving into old age, okay? And we see that beginning. I mean, boomers are beginning to retire, right? I mean, you know, to look at all the discussion of Social Security, look at all the discussion of can boomers afford to retire. Of course, so many of them were neglectful about saving. That's another issue. Gen X is beginning to, you know, move into midlife roles. We talked about President Obama, sort of the leading edge of that. And, you know, Timothy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, is born the same year, you know, 1961. So we got all these people born in the 60s becoming our CEOs and leaders now. So that's the beginning of a generational replacement. And we have this new generation of millennials who are, you know, they're the enlisted people in the Army. They're the officers up to, you know, lieutenant and captain. They're the they're the entry-level workers in our economy. They're coming out of professional schools. They're the new hires coming in.
What determine these years, Neil? These years for like the GIs, the silence, the boomers, the Xers, 61 to 81. How'd you get the years?
We draw the years retrospectively because they can vary a little bit depending upon events, because events can sometimes draw lines through two consecutive cohorts. For example, a war will come along, and we'll really draw a pretty uncontinuous line between two cohorts, right? One cohort actually had to experience the war, and the next cohort didn't, right? So you have very real differences in later life experiences and attitudes and behaviors later on. And these things also influence self-identification. I mean, if you feel like you experienced the 60s or the 70s as kind of the 60s mood, okay, well, that kind of makes you a boomer, right? But if you came of age after the election of Ronald Reagan, right? I mean, that was just a different era. You grew up as a kid during the during the wild times, whether it was the rock heyday of rock and roll or disco or whatever, you came of age at a very different time. And this is what determines generational membership. And you draw divisions between generations, between birth years, based on that location. Sometimes, in some ways, some attitudes and behaviors, that is a soft boundary. In other cases, as I mentioned, because of events that a cohort did or did not experience, having come of age fully into adulthood, it can be a hard boundary. But this is what draws the line between generations, and it's why you have to wait a little bit as a generation grows up before you can draw a boundary. A good example of that is, where do we draw the end of the millennial generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if these were the babies on board of 1982 with huge changes in attitudes toward children in the early 1980s, you remember that was the time of suddenly family values and cocooning. And remember I told you earlier about all those Child of Devil movies?
Right.
Do you remember those were suddenly replaced around 1983, 84 by all these cuddly baby movies? Remember Baby Boom and Parenthood and Three Men and a Baby and Look Who's Talking?
That's
you remember
right.
All that stuff? Suddenly, there was no bad child movie that ever made it into a movie theater. Well, this was the opening sign of a huge difference in the way kids were being perceived and in what was thought necessary to raise them well. There was a big push back toward protection, structure, giving them a sense of mission, and these things show up, later on in looking at behavior. I mean, for instance, the millennials as teenagers by the late 1990s and over this last decade have been responsible for a tremendous reduction in risk-taking. A 65 to 70% reduction in violent crime among youth, probably the most rapid reduction in youth crime in American history.
Why would that be? Why would that happen?
Well, because these kids were raised differently. They were closer to their families. They were special. They were given a lot more personal attention. They were much more in the home. And, of course, these things cut both ways. I mean, you have these kids who lead these very structured, protected lives, gives rise to new issues like obesity, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Nothing is always unalloyed.
There's always a consequence, isn't there?
Solve one problem, you give rise to another. And it's interesting how back in the early 90s, if you had gone on K-12 schools and you'd gone onto college campuses, everyone wondered about the complete unruliness, the attitude, the individualism of young people. Today, you don't hear that complaint. I'm on college campuses a lot because I'm often invited to go there and speak or talk to administrators. And one of the biggest complaints I get now about college kids is their aversion to risk. They don't want to take chances. They want to form a consensus with all of their friends.